Marion Mahoney Griffin was one of the first female architects to work in America. She was an exceptional draftswoman, became a key figure in the office of Frank Lloyd Wright. An exhibition and seminar is being organised in Dublin to celebrate the work of this little-known but important Irish-American woman. Marion Mahoney Griffin discussed opens the Irish Architecture Foundation, and with me in studio, curator Sarah Sheridan and Brian Ward. And I suppose we can start by saying, in fact, the seminar is going to be called Marion Mahoney Griffin Discuss.
Yes.
You're very keen, Sarah, that we might ditch the Mahoney side of things, are you?
Well, I suppose there's an issue there where we're trying to reclaim her for her Irishness, not in a kind of a leprechaun type of way, but more insofar as it's to do with understanding her transnational identity, and held within that is her description of the use of her surname. So in America, she would have been known as Marion Mahoney. As her father, who was an Irish-American who left during the Great Famine, arrived over to Chicago, he was cast within, I suppose, a melting pot of immigrants, whereby there were a lot of Italians. And his first teacher noted his name on the school roll and described him as Mahoney. He was, you know...
He hated that.
He was, yeah, he was... He said, oh, all these Italian names. So what happened was Mahoney stuck, and Marion noted to herself, where did they get this M-A-Y? I'd prefer if they changed the Y to a H and I could be Mahoney. And because she moved a lot around, and maybe I'm moving too quickly, but she moved from America to Australia to India over her lifetime. And in America, she went from Mahoney to Mahoney. And it was only when she got to Australia where they actually understood her name as Mahoney.
All right, so it took that length of time.
Yeah.
No, it's actually, you're not moving too fast in that. It's good to get that overview of just how big an international career she eventually had. Okay. The Griffin part is when she married.
Right.
Another man that we reckon might have a double-barreled name, Walter Burley Griffin. Thankfully, they didn't try to fit the Burley in as well. So will we go with Marion Mahoney Griffin for the sake of this conversation then, Brian? As Sarah was saying there, probably not that well known in this country. But was it really in America, and initially in America, in the office of Frank Lloyd Wright? That was where she made her name, yeah?
Exactly.
And how did she do that?
So, well, she was the second woman to graduate as an architect from MIT. So she graduated in 1894, and she attained her license to practice architecture in 1898. Again, very early for anybody, actually. The idea of licensing an architect at that stage was just gaining currency. So Frank Lloyd Wright had actually wouldn't have had a license himself, but he had a very interesting studio on the go, out of the city of Chicago, which would have been the offices at that stage would have been quite corporate in Chicago, and he had a studio which was next to his wife's kindergarten, and Marion Mahoney chose to work there. And she was very important within the office for a variety of different reasons. One was her design skills, but more importantly was her skill as a draftswoman. So she, and again, drawing within an architectural office is a very collaborative endeavor. But she was the woman who came up essentially with the way in which that office began to think about a new way of designing the domestic interior.
Yeah, am I right in thinking that one of her big contributions in that respect, sir, was this idea of, yes, the domestic space is inside the house, but you've got windows, you've got doors, and you've got a whole outside environment. Mm-hmm. And if you can manage it, that's what you want to bring into the inside of the house.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in a way, I suppose we are architectural historians, but what increasingly captivated her with us was to do with the way she operated, as Brian says, in a collaborative environment, but also that she was increasingly preoccupied with nature and environment and connecting with the outside with great economy of means. So she has a lot to say about contemporary issues to have to do with the environment. So she may have kind of lessons for which we have kind of forgotten, and we're kind of reclaiming an idea
that
or an ambition.
We think are 21st century ideas,
but
they're much earlier.
No, absolutely. And that while she has been kind of maligned in a way, in that she hasn't got much traction in architectural history, but that she has things to say to talk about the imminence of nature and the significance of fitting into a landscape and a reciprocal relationship between people and their environment, rather than placing things kind of in a more, I suppose, aggressive means whereby you're going to control the nature and control the environment.
You know, cut down all the trees, get rid of all the grass, build the thing, put down a tarmac, and off you go. She was looking at designing things to fit into the environment in which they were happening.
Yeah. And in fact, she did a whole series of portraits for which we've copies held in the exhibition, which were known as the forest portraits, which were 24 drawings of different types of trees she came across in Tasmania. And each of them, while she's holding and she's describing the singular tree, she includes it within a circumstance and a context. So she's been very specific about where
the building will be in relation to these natural phenomena that are in and around wherever the site is.
So there's a real consciousness within her design work of placement within landscape and how it engages people and the environment together.
And is that part of Prairie Style? Because that is Prairie Style is pretty much a Frank Lloyd Wright thing. Am I right in thinking that? Well, he would say that possibly.
Exactly. Yeah, he would say that. And one of the books that, or the book, I suppose, upon which we've based our exhibition is called The Magic of America, which is a book that she wrote towards the end of her life as a biography of her husband, Walter Burley Griffin. But it's a very interesting book in that she is trying to, I suppose, rewrite the history of the Prairie School of Architecture and to draw attention to the fact that there was a collaborative nature to that, and that she was writing The Magic of America during the 1930s, just after Frank Lloyd Wright had published his autobiography, in which he had built himself up as the hero of that style and claimed it for himself.
Was he not prepared to give any kind of recognition to those who worked in the office with him, including her?
Again, that's an interesting point, because early on he would have been much more interested in collaboration than he became later in his life. So by the time he's writing his autobiography, it is all about himself. But he had, during the Oak Park years, which is when Marion Mahoney would have been working for him, he had a kind of a collaborative studio.
So she married Walter Burley Griffin. He was an architect as well, Sarah.
Yes, he also worked in Frank Lloyd Wright's office. And I mean, it's kind of interesting in a way that the way, as we understand it, is she more or less pursued Walter Burley Griffin. They went off on canoe trips, and she was quite certain that she wanted to be, you know, in a relationship with him. And she proposed to him, and he accepted the proposal. And she really kind of was a kind of, she drove Walter's career in that she suggested he would enter the Canberra Town Planning Competition.
And this is what brought them to Australia, which you mentioned earlier on.
And it was a huge competition. It was their moment as such, because, you know, they could have stayed in America and established their careers, but instead they got this great, prize that they had to go over, and they were faced with great political adversaries over in Australia, but they had to seize that moment, I suppose. And in a way, the American architects, there wasn't a lot of work around at the time, so they're, you know, that they, it,
it
was
made
the,
financial sense to
it made,
move as
yes,
well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, so they had high ambitions, and she describes kind of more or less, you know, being a fly in Walter's ear, saying, you know, that's a fly is the wrong analogy to use there, isn't it? But, you know, that she was at him saying, we need to enter this competition. Come on, I know it makes sense. It's our fate. She was completely convinced. And in a sense, and she did the drawings. And the drawings are, a lot of our collaborators would argue, that they are what won the competition. I mean, the design is wonderful, but the drawings are phenomenal. Mm. And they, again, we have some images of them within the exhibition in the gallery space, so that was her skill set, really.
And all of this coming from the unpublished biography that she wrote, which is the Magic of America. Sarah did mention to us, Brian, that subsequently there was time in India. Did any kind of Eastern philosophy then start to make its way into the work and into the drawings?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And they established a garden suburb in Sydney in the 1920s, into which a lot of Bohemians moved, because they had kind of set up this environment in which there was, you know, theatrical shows on within nature, etc. So they attracted a very interesting crowd out to this garden suburb. That they designed it and they developed it. Mm. And amongst that crowd were anthroposophists, so people who had read Steiner, the educationalist and philosopher Steiner, and they became very interested in the writings of Steiner as well. So when in the 1930s they went to India, they, I suppose, found to some extent a milieu in which they could operate, in which notions of spirituality were central to life.
And perhaps more readily accepted.
Exactly, yeah.
And did they remain then? Did they remain in India? Or did they? What happened after that? Was it the end of the story, if you like?
Yeah,
spoiler
the
alert.
End perhaps isn't, yeah. We won't spoil it all, but perhaps this is a way of explaining why she wasn't known in that, okay, so Walter died very unexpectedly and quite suddenly while he was in India, and Marian had to travel from Australia to India to finish out his work. And so she finished out the work, moved briefly back to Australia for, I think, less than a matter of weeks or months, and moved quickly back to America, to Chicago, where she lived with her sister originally, and her sister passed away. She lived with her niece and her child. And she, unfortunately, while she had a long life, similar to other Irish protagonists, let's say, within architectural history, Eileen Gray, she wasn't productive right up to the end. So she did do a few kind of commissioned works within America on her return, but unfortunately none of them were built. They were high profile, they were very progressive type projects, and she then in her latter years suffered from dementia.
So the skills and the abilities were gone, unfortunately.
So she couldn't in a way rewrite her, publicise herself, but it also meant that a lot of researchers who came knocking on her door in later years were basically Frank Lloyd Wright scholars or Walter Burley Griffin scholars, and they weren't really interested in hearing her at all.
Which is why you are reclaiming her for this year. Sarah Sheridan and Brian Ward there talking to us about it. And let's call her Marian Mahony Griffin, discuss that is at the Irish Architecture Foundation. The exhibition runs from July the 5th through until the 27th, and there's a symposium on the 5th as well, when I presume you'll be expanding on some of the ideas that you've spoken with me about here this evening. You can find out full information on architecturefoundation.com.